So is this like a speed situation where if we don't like hit an hour on the dot, you're...
Yeah,
I just have to be done by noon. That's the thing. So yeah, let's get cranking.
So
yeah,
we got 50 minutes.
Yeah.
50 minutes. Okay, let's just go then.
All right, here we go. Helps if I do the right stupid song. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio episode... Is it 98 already?
Wow, 98. We're as old as Abe Vigoda. 98.
Wow.
What are we doing for 100?
I don't know. I've had suggestions of bringing like a studio audience in while we do the show or something.
That'll be exciting for them.
Yeah.
But they won't see me.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Perhaps we'll do a live show.
Hmm. Where are we going to do it live, though?
No, I mean like do a live stream.
Oh.
Because I think we have the equipment to do it.
We've done that, though.
We haven't done it.
We need to have like a chimp
time
in here or something like really outrageous.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
We'll think of something. And this is Barry.
Yeah, that's Barry. I'm Dave.
Ethan. Yeah.
And joining us this week, a very special guest, Barry's better half, Julia.
Yay!
Thanks for coming.
If I don't clap, I'm in trouble.
Melissa is busy studying like crazy because finals are coming up, and Steph is not feeling well, so she wasn't able to make it. That's okay. This week, it is Brown Coat Sunday. We are talking some Firefly goodness.
Woo!
We're going to change up the order of things a little bit, just because we're on a time crunch, because I've got something else to do, and so does Julia. So let's just go ahead and talk about what hit theaters this week. We'll do what if we have time at the end, we'll talk about what we watched this week, though.
All right. The new film by Nimrod Antal. I love that his name is Nimrod. This is the director of Control, though. He is a good director, even though his name is Nimrod. Armored, starring Matt Dillon, which nobody saw over the weekend. Brothers, starring Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Natalie Portman.
That's been getting really good buzz.
It really has, yeah. So I might have to take back all the mean things I said and actually go see it. Everybody's Fine, which we've hyped.
We played the interview.
We did?
Yeah,
with Robert De Niro.
With Robert De Niro. Well, you mean the movie has him. Yeah.
We
interview De Niro.
We interviewed Kirk Jones, the director of Everybody's Fine. And then in limited release, thank goodness, Transylvania.
Yeah. Didn't something else come out limited release?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. In limited release, Jason Reitman's up in the air.
There we go. Are you okay over there, Ethan?
What, am I doing something?
Well, it sounded like you were readjusting, so I was just making sure you're all right over there.
Readjusting.
Okay. And there it is.
Yay! Cheap joke number one.
We are good to go.
Yes.
I don't think any of us saw anything. We already talked about Up in the Air. Did you see it at all, Ethan, or did it come out in your neck of the woods?
It has not, so wait.
Okay. Okay, I guess we don't need to talk about anything that came out this week.
No, I think I've already talked about Everybody's Fine enough. It's a very good film.
Yes.
Everybody needs to go out and run and see it this Christmas.
Were you allowed, I don't know, were you allowed to talk about it?
I could talk about it now.
Yeah, you really didn't talk about it much. You gushed in it in the interview, but that was about it.
I'll just say very briefly, I mean, it's not a perfect movie. It really milks those tears, but I think it's a very sweet film. I think it's a very meaningful movie, and you know, there's a lot of films there's movies this season that are designed to make you go out and buy blue action figures or buy DVDs and CDs of chipmunks butchering Christmas songs. This movie does not want you to... What's that?
Precious?
Oh,
this movie doesn't want you to go back to the mall. It wants you to appreciate the life that you have and appreciate your family and the time you spend with them, for better or for worse. I think it's a very meaningful film, and I think it's a movie a family should go see this Christmas. I really do.
You saw it twice before it even released.
I did. So,
and you're going to see it again.
I just might.
I don't know about that.
No? Okay.
Maybe.
Well, I would see it again. It was very good. I like the film. And you saw it too.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah.
Okay. I enjoyed it a lot.
Cool.
You were blubbering next to me. I saw some wetness.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk about what's in DVD this week then as well.
DVD, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, available on regular and Blu-ray disc. My favorite film of the year thus far, Michael Mann's Public Enemies with Johnny Depp and Christian Bale, available on regular and Blu-ray. Also regular and Blu-ray, another one of my favorites, Julie and Julia with Meryl Streep and Amy Adams. Great film. Lost Season 5, the fifth season. That's a little redundant. Rescue Me, Season 5, Volume 2. And then the Harry Potter Collection, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, the Ultimate Edition, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Ultimate Edition. And then Harry Potter Years 1 through 6, the Gift Set.
You know, if people were smart, they'd just wait for the big Uber one. You know, when they're done with the next two movies.
Exactly. Well, I hear there's going to be another Die Hard, which has kept me from buying the Die Hard 4 movie.
There's another Die Hard?
Well, Bruce wants to do a one where John McClane dies hard. So, yeah, there will be one more.
I'm so leaving that alone.
Die Hard is my favorite Christmas movie, by the way.
Nice.
Excellent choice, dear.
Mm-hmm. That gained some points.
Yeah.
All right, is that's our DVDs for the week.
That's it.
All right, you know, we have got time to do all the news stories, I think. Ethan, I'll let you go first since you've got the vast majority of them.
Well, looks like Paul Greengrass has quit Bourne 4.
This is a little interesting because it reaches more.
Okay, first, before if someone makes a joke saying, well, maybe there won't be shaky cam this time, I'm going to jump through this headset and slap that person across the face. Just putting it out there.
Well, I'm glad I didn't say that then. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. What? But this has further implications than just Greengrass quitting.
Greengrass.
Oh, go ahead, Barry. You were getting ready.
Well, no. I mean, no. Apparently, Matt Damon has hinted at least that he won't go back. You know, without Greengrass, he really feels that he's the helmer of this series. And
that's right.
There was a lot of problems on the first one with Doug LeMann. There was a lot of people saying that the first one wouldn't get released. They had so many problems with the first movie, even though it turned out great. So,
and Bourne hinges on
Matt Damon.
That's right. You can't, and you can't have a Bourne movie without
Matt Damon.
Oh yes.
No joke is too low or too cheap for us.
Exactly. Yeah. So essentially, they're gonna go get. Wow, I don't even know where to go with that. I was trying to think of some generic blonde actor to take his place, but that's okay.
That's Paul Bettany.
There you go. But he's a good actor.
Yeah, he is good. You're right.
Yeah.
That was cheap.
All right. What else have you got, Ethan?
Well, the last installment in the Twilight Saga franchise will be split into two movies.
I love that you can't even get through that sentence without laughing. Pre-show or during the show? Did you guys read Devin Farachi's article at Chud?
Not yet.
Yeah. That's not really a surprise, though.
No.
Well, it's all about milking this cash cow.
Well, part of it is the content of said final book is going to be very difficult to put into a PG-13 movie.
Oh, because they finally consummate their love.
Yeah, what is the theory? It's the Man of Steel, Woman of Kleenex argument? Yes. That was in Mallrats. They talked about that, right? The shotgun blast. Yeah.
Right. You know, I got to say, though, you know they're going to keep going because Breaking Dawn is going to make so much money. You know they're going to do a prequel because, you know, these vampires are hundreds of years old. So, you know, Pattinson, I mean, you could, like, you know, insert him into the Wild West or, like,
in
medieval times.
I can't handle any more of him.
Wait, but who's going to be, like, the hot guy in the next one? Because at first it was Team Edward, now it's Team Jacob, and now they need a new star to manufacture as a heartthrob.
To bring The Rock in, then I'll get excited about it.
What would he be, though? Like a heartthrob zombie? He's, like, rotting away. I love you, Bella. I don't know.
That's the thing about this franchise. It's so manufactured. It's like they say to Taylor Lautner, okay, we're going to put you in the gym 5 hours a day so that we can show clips at Comic-Con of you shirtless and sell Burger King hats with, let's say, Team Jacob. It's just so manufactured. It's
Well, you know, it's like all the work he did in the gym doesn't show as in terms of him being an actor. He's got that big scene of him and Bella where they're in the rain and he gives like this passionate speech, except there's no passion. There's no acting there. His abs are doing all the work for him.
See, here's my true problem with this. Who are they going to get to write a prequel? Because there's a certain very, 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 very low standard of writing that you have to keep up with.
Well, I'm sure if they paid Stephanie Myers like $10 million, she'd be like, okay, Jacob goes to camp. There you go. I give in.
Wait, invites Jason.
Is this like Ernest Goes to Camp?
Yeah, exactly. Be like, Bella in space. Okay, I'll do it.
With Jason. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Twilight versus Friday the 13th. See, they're there.
With the leprechaun, huh? The leprechaun.
And the hood.
Yeah.
Wow.
I hope Stephanie Myers is listening. This is just a wealth of ideas.
You know, these movies have gotten so bad. You know, I would probably, just knowing what happens in Breaking Dawn, I would go see it in the theater just to laugh maniacally.
I got to say, though, like I said earlier, you know, New Moon was an improvement. It was a serious improvement. This series is still not good, but it was a step up from Twilight. I mean, New Moon is not going to be on my 10 worst list. It's nowhere near as bad as the first one.
But is it going to step up to the streets?
Well, it's actually on that level. Okay. Now it's on the level of a step-up sequel. So.
It's really bad. Have you seen it, Dave?
No. No.
Now, Julie disagrees with me. You thought it was just as bad as the first one, or if not worse, or...
I just think they're all terrible.
No, okay.
Okay, fair enough. All right, enough Twilight bashing. We've got years. This is the beauty of having more sequels, too. We've got years of mileage out of this joke.
That's right.
I guess I'll do my one quick news story, and that would be that I got emails and tweets about this like crazy. Steven Spielberg has wisened up and is stepping away from Harvey. That means I can't hate him anymore. I still have problems respecting a lot of his work, but...
Well, you have a lot of other reasons to not like him. I love that this fell apart, and Old Boy fell apart, too. I love that we're not going to have to sit through those movies.
Didn't he have, like, trouble getting the budget for Tintin, too?
Did he?
Did he? Because I thought Tintin's done, right? Because I thought...
Well, I think at first it was like there was the studio turned it down or something because it was too expensive. So I'm just saying, like, Spielberg, he's feeling the recession, you know?
Well, I don't think he's quite the powerhouse that he used to be, because I think it's one thing that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull made $500, $600 million worldwide. It's another thing if everybody liked it, because The Last Crusade was not the top grossing film of 20 years ago, but it was by far one of the most loved films of its time. And, you know, there's a big difference. I mean, that's like one of the reasons Tim Burton was never given the okay to do a Planet of the Apes sequel, because the first Planet of the Apes was a huge, huge hit. You won't find a single person on the street who says they love that movie.
But so. Transformers 3 in summers in theaters summer 2011.
That's so. Right.
Yeah.
The one downside is that apparently Harvey may still happen. It's just not going to be Spielberg who desecrates it.
Oh well, well,
that's okay.
Let some other hack tries. It's not going to.
Hey, what's Ratner doing these days?
What? Writing that Rush Hour 4 script as we speak.
There we go. All right, what else you got, Ethan?
PTA, Parent Teacher Association, has announced his next movie. It will be a period piece set in the 50s starring Philip Seymour Hoffman about a man who starts his own religion.
That's terrific.
I'm very curious to see
forward
how
to
this...
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
stoked to see he's doing another movie with PSH.
Yeah. All they're missing is NPH, and then they're good to go.
For listeners who don't know what the frick we're talking about, this is the director of Punch Drunk Love, Boogie Nights, There Will Be Blood, and not the director of Soldier, Event Horizon, and the Death Race remake.
Isn't that P.W.?
Paul, what script Anderson?
No. Yeah, P.W.S.A., yeah.
Pee Wee Herman Anderson, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, so they're skirting around the issue that this is essentially going to be a movie about L. Ron Hubbard.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, good luck. I hope he can hide that, because if that gets out, that could be a problem.
At least that's the joke going around. I don't know. You got one more, right, Ethan?
Yeah, the Leona Lewis single that will play at the end of Avatar has been released.
Uh-huh. And?
Buzzkill.
Can you compare it? Like, if there's a pop song that's out right now, like, does it sound like anything we've heard before?
Well, you're familiar with Leona Lewis,
unfortunately,
right?
I am, yep.
It sounds like all her other songs, so...
Okay.
It's like... You are a blue cat, I'm a blue cat too. We're gonna travel the planet of Pandora and...
That's seriously the song?
No.
Oh.
See, you've got us fooled already, Ethan. Well done, sir.
Man.
Wow, we have cruised through the first portion of this show. That's okay. We got a lot to say about Firefly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
We do. So let's go ahead and take a quick break, because last time I didn't take a break, we ended up going way too long. So we'll do that, and we will be right back.
In a world where knowledge is power, in an age where time is the most valuable commodity, in a voice that's killing my throat, comes a podcast that will bring you wisdom in less than 1 minute a day. So join me, Martin Darkley, as we journey to enlightenment. Our teachers, classic lines from cinema history. Come then to moviemantras.com and begin a voyage to a higher state.
Thank you. Jane's got a big gun. Summer's busy beating up everyone. Space is the place. Better win that race, or else the Reaver's gonna eat your face. Thank you, Mr. Whedon, for continuing their quest. But did you really have to stab in the chest? Nobody believed that they could win. Go, Browncoats, go! I mean, he was my favorite, next to Kaylee.
And we're back. Thank you, Randy Newman. We're going to be talking about Joss Whedon's legendary show, which only lasted 11 episodes that were aired on TV during the fall of 2002, with three that were unaired. The show seemingly disappeared, though the cult lived on. The series came back as a film, which we will talk about briefly. But yeah, let's talk about the mythological sci-fi geek haven that is Firefly.
First of all, for all the Browncoats, yes, you heard a bleep during the song. Thanks to Paul and Storm for making that awesome song. Just because I know it's a spoiler for a TV show, it's 5+ years ago, but still, people are still discovering it.
So yeah, I'm glad you did that.
Ruin that. I figured let's start off talking about what the story of Firefly is. The story is of Captain Malcolm Reynolds, played by Nathan Fillion, who fought in a solar system wide. I think they established that it was in the same solar system,
mm-hmm.
that entire universe. Against it's essentially the Star Wars story, the Rebels versus the Alliance or the Empire, whichever way you want to put it. And after that war's over, his side lost, and he's off trying to make his own life. And essentially being a mercenary and a smuggler and pretty much whatever else people pay him to do. Well, no, actually, Inara takes care of the rest of that sentence. But yes, our cast of characters, we've got Inara, the ambassador, if you will, companion. Geisha, I guess, is probably a good way to term what
yes,
she does.
Yes,
yes. All kinds of services. Leave
all
it alone.
Kinds.
We've got the...
Hey, Tucker.
What?
Nothing.
It's a good title for a movie right there, Ethan.
Yeah, there you go. We've got the engineer, Kaylee, who is a sweet girl, kind of the heart of the episode, mm-hmm. just really looks for the best in people. We've got Shepherd Book, who is a shepherd, pastor, whatever you want to call.
Or is he?
Holy man. No, he is. It's just, what else is he? Mm. Adam Baldwin plays Jane, the glorious Jane Cobb, the hero of Canton. jacked up. Morals guy, which we have interview clips with him that we'll be playing shortly. So we got Wash, who's the pilot, kind of the true smart aleck, smart ass of the entire show, and he's
married to Tudyk.
Yes, and Gina Torres plays Zoe, who is Alan's Wash's wife and kind of the second in command to Captain Reynolds. She fought with him in the war, and she's like Xena, pretty much with guns. So, anyone want to try? Who's like your favorite character of these, and why, Ethan?
Kaylee, because she's hot.
You missed two.
I miss Simon and River.
Yeah, what's up with
you
that?
You miss River.
I know.
That's the whole focal point of the...
River, yeah. Who is the girl in a box, which we'll be talking about shortly, and her brother Simon, who will do anything to save his sister from the evil alliance.
Is a doctor.
Yes, yes. And I'm sorry to cut you off there, Ethan. Who is your favorite character?
Kaylee, because she's hot.
Fair enough.
No, she's my top three. I guess it's typical, but yeah, Mal would be my favorite. Yeah.
And why would that be? What makes you connect to him?
Because, it's Nathan Fillion, really. The charm he brings to the role is just, it's pretty epic.
Fair enough. All right, Julia, who is your favorite?
I don't know. I think I agree with Ethan.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The Kaylee's the hottest?
Yeah.
I agree with Ethan, too.
No, I like Captain Reynolds.
Okay, yeah. Captain tight pants. Yeah. Or no pants, depending on the episode.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. I like Jane. I love the snarkdom that he brings to every episode.
What was that, Ethan?
I I was just gonna say, actually, I should mention I dressed up as Mal for one Halloween, so just putting it out there.
Did anybody know who you were, or was it like one of these costumes you had to explain to everybody?
Well, it was like at a geek. It was with a lot of. It was kind of at a geek place.
Oh, nice!
All my geek friends knew.
Sweet,
cool. And you're a Jane.
I do. I love what Baldwin brings to every episode because, you know me, I'm very cynical when it comes to like sci-fi series that are like new, and I can't stand it when it's like a bunch of actors like giving all this gobbledygook about, you know, about like these made up worlds and stuff. And there's just something, there's like this gritty, like annoyed realism that he brings to every episode that kind of balances off the fact that it's sci-fi. And he really reminds me, if anything else, if nothing else, that this is a Western in space. And I think that Baldwin, for me, always grounds the show. Because, I mean, you know, Fillion's terrific, but for me, Baldwin always reminds me that this is conceptually, this could be in the 1800s. It doesn't have to be in a spaceship.
Fair enough. I actually went a couple of years ago dressed as Jane. I have a Blue Sun t-shirt. I've actually got the gun belt. I have the Bowie knife. I got the whole thing. But I'd have to say Wash for me, just because he's such a smart aleck and always finds a joke to have, no matter how dire the situation gets. That's pretty much me, so...
You know, and I'll say really quickly, because we don't have to make it about this or talk about this any further, I love the fact that there is an interracial relationship on this show, and they don't say anything about it.
Yeah.
It is natural. It is real. The chemistry between them is potent, and they're wonderful together, and I love that about this show. For me, that's almost as radical as what Gene Roddenberry did with the original Star Trek. It's like, this is, look, it's an interracial cast, interracial relationships. Who cares?
Yeah, and another side of it is, I mean, that relationship really flips the stereotype of a marriage in every way, shape, or form, because... She's far more
in charge.
Forward
yeah.
than he is.
Yeah.
But he, you know, they go as far as to say, you know, that's kind of what I like, you know, and but there's also little things here and there to show that, you know, there's the army life and then there's their private life.
Yep.
And it's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sorry, I'm probably the biggest Joss Whedon fan here overall.
Probably.
Because I'm the only one who also likes Buffy and Angel. But,
and now, Dollhouse.
I'm saying,
my bad.
I'm saying this as a fan of Whedon, but would you agree that kind of all his characters kind of talk the same?
They sound like him. You can hear, you know, like I think all great writers who have a distinct and really, you know, and real, you know, who. Who could talk so much better than I can at the moment? They, you know, you could really hear themselves in the characters. Unfortunately, that's the truth about George Lucas. But I think it's certainly the case with Joss Whedon. It's the case with Kevin Smith. You can hear his distinct voice in his characters, I think.
I mean, it's like if in Juno she slayed vampires instead of was pregnant, I have a feeling all these internet fanboys wouldn't be complaining about the dialogue. Just putting it out there. Getting on my soapbox here.
It is kind of the same world. It's even like with Kevin Williamson when he did the Scream movies or
yes.
Dawson's Creek. I mean, you know, it was people who talk who probably wouldn't talk that way in real life, but they sell it so well and it's so well written that you kind of roll with it.
It's the same thing with Woody Allen. You could always hear him in his characters, and there's always like a one standing character in one of his movies where, oh, that's Woody Allen. He should be playing this role.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like when Firefly first came out, people were like, oh, so Wash is the Xander character from Buffy, you know, things like that. The interesting thing is that you kind of saw Firefly before Firefly happened in Alien Resurrection.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I know how you feel about that movie, and I love that film. And yes, you could. The Ron Perlman character is essentially Jane in another.
Yeah.
It is a tryout for Firefly, and I'll stop talking about Alien Resurrection because I know they hate it when I bring it up. But
no, I don't mind it. You know, it's essentially a video game movie, but you know,
it is
her going level to level, you know, shooting stuff.
That's right.
So this show. It's kind of hard to know where to go with this. We can talk about the episodes we like. We can talk about the commentaries we like. We can talk about the marketing. Which one do we want to cover first?
How about we talk about our background with the show? Like how we got introduced to it.
Okay. And since you started it, haha.
Oh, geez, I'm on the spot here.
Again.
Well, I remember the summer before Serenity came out, summer of 2005, just all this hype about it on the internet. I'm like, okay, I got to see the show. But whenever I went to like HMV or Best Buy, they never had it. So I was like panicking until the very week before Serenity came out. There was a school trip to Minneapolis. We went to the Mall of America. I went to Suncoast, which is freaking overpriced like hell.
Yeah.
And I bought it. And in my room with my people sharing the room with me, I showed the pilot to them and. It was a magical experience. And I remember I like marathoned it that weekend. I borrowed it. I lent it to my friend on Monday. He marathoned it. We went to see the Serenity on the weekend, and we both loved it.
Cool. Am I the only one who saw it during its original broadcast?
Yeah.
None of us, yes.
Okay. I guess I'll go next then.
Go ahead.
I talked. The only reason that I saw it, you know, I'd caught episodes of Buffy here and there, and like Ethan said, I'm not a fan of it for whatever reason. But the family connection kicked in. My uncle worked on Firefly, and something that happened, he's very subdued about the stuff that he works on. He'll be like, you know, see it, don't see it, you know, skip, steal, whatever you do. You know, he'll give us those warnings. This was the first time that he talked about how proud he was to be on a show and how much he enjoyed being on a show, which really caught my interest. I caught half an episode once and kept trying to find it on TV, but Fox kept screwing with the stupid schedule so you could never find it at the same time. But yeah, I knew I liked it.
Aired out of order too, right?
Pardon?
Aired it out of order too, right?
Yes. Yes, they didn't air the pilot until after the show had already been canceled. Just so
dumb.
It's beyond idiotic. Yeah. Yeah. So Julia, where did you get the Firefly bug?
Well, Barry and I saw the movie first, and then you let me borrow your DVDs. And then I just sat in my living room and watched them all in like a week.
That's exactly what she did. And I bought her the DVD box set of Christmas or so ago. So yeah. every once in a while, I'll come home and she'll be watching like stacks of episode at a time. So
very cool.
Yeah, and I ignored it when it was on. The spots didn't emphasize the wit at all to me. It looked like another Babylon 5 or Earth. You know, like, you know, one of those cheese balls. I didn't know it was Joss Whedon. It just didn't look any good to me. It really didn't. And then it was off the air. And I'm like, oh, well, another show bites the dust. And it wasn't until you, Dave, reintroduced me to it. And Jules and I got hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you bring up a great point about the marketing, which, you know what? I'm just going to play this first clip right now. It's when we talked to Adam Baldwin at Starfest a couple years ago, was it?
2 years ago, yeah.
And this is the only thing we talked about Firefly, but he talked about how messed up the marketing was.
That just brings to mind the marketing campaign for Firefly. You know, it's a space captain and a space western with a hooker of the heart of gold and a girl in a box. Might as well be walking on the sun. It's like, oh man, that's not our show. Come on.
Yeah, it wasn't quite bad enough that they couldn't even get the marketing, you know, that they couldn't get the marketing right, that they couldn't keep it in the same time slot even. It's just that this marketing just was so completely and utterly wrong.
It looks stupid.
Smash Mouth
really
ruined Firefly, basically.
I do remember that spot, though. I do remember the Smash Mouth song being attached to it. And I'm like, yeah, it just didn't look good. It really didn't.
Yeah. You kind of got upset that they ruined the whole who's the girl in the box thing in the commercials until you realize, oh, wait, we're not even going to show the pilot. Until, again, like I said, it's already been canceled.
And I'll just jump really quick and say the pilot is probably my favorite episode because for me, the wit was there. The scope was there. Like this is great. Like all the characters are getting the setup that they need. It just, you don't really see that in pilots. I mean, for me, it really did feel like a feature film. Like everything was put together so neatly. And it just, it's just one of those great pilots where like, okay, I'm there for the ride. I want to see what happens next.
Absolutely. So that's your favorite episode?
That's my favorite episode. It really is. Because after the pilot, I just want to keep watching. And I think that's what a great pilot should do.
Absolutely. What's your favorite episode?
Well, I really liked the pilot, the one that they should have aired. And then
Serenity.
After listening to the commentary and finding out that they had to do a second pilot, I thought that was so lame. But actually, my favorite episode is the one where you think Malcolm's going to die from lack of oxygen.
Out of gas. That is an amazingly good episode.
I like that one because it has him. It has like three different times, the present, the way past, and then earlier that day. And then you really get a sense of all the characters and how they came to be on the ship. His like main crew.
Yeah. Yeah. Because everyone else is introduced in the pilot otherwise.
Exactly. But yeah.
Very cool. That's a very
good
episode. Find
out that Kaylee's not a little angel like you thought.
Well, she is, just not in the way that you've thought.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's a very unique person. It's hard for me to choose what my favorite is. There's so many to choose from. I tend to go for the more lighthearted ones. I think Our Mrs. Reynolds might be it.
Oh, that was a good one.
Where Mal gets married.
Yeah, to the chick from Mad Men with the huge knockers.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, she's known by so many things. I call her Aaron's hot sister because her brother does a podcast, Geeks On, that I love. That's the show that got me into podcasting. And that was always a running gag, was that, oh, Aaron's sister's hot. And he got so sick of hearing that. I think he still is. But yeah, that was just such a fun episode because everyone gets a joke in that episode. And what I like about this series especially is that everyone has their time to shine mm-hmm. in various ways. Ethan, what's your favorite episode?
Actually, the last two you've mentioned are probably my two favorite episodes, Our Mrs. Reynolds and Out of Gas. So way to steal mm-hmm. my thunder.
Sorry.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'll change mine to Janestown.
That is a good one too.
That's the thing. There really isn't a weak episode among the 14. That's the crazy part of it all.
There probably is, but that's because we can't remember it.
No, going through, I'll watch them of the commentaries. I hated the commentary for Shindig because oh, look at the pretty costumes. We watched all the commentaries again through getting ready for this, and I didn't mind it near as much the second time around because it really goes into how much detail they went into for every aspect of this show. Not just in the writing and the sets, but even the costuming and what lengths they would go to. There are so many good episodes. You've listened to all the commentaries, right?
Not all of them.
Okay.
But a few.
Okay. Have you listened to many of them, Ethan?
I haven't listened to any of them.
Because not all the episodes come with one.
Not all of them do.
So I was disappointed by that.
Gotcha. I will say that should you have, if you haven't seen the show, if you haven't listened to the commentaries, you need to, because all of them are gold. My favorite one is actually on War Stories, which is probably one of the darker episodes that there are, but it happens to have a commentary by Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk. And these are probably some of the most entertaining commentaries I've ever heard in my life, because they bring in the jokes, they joke on each other, they joke on their own performances, they bust on Joss, but they also have great insights into the episode and what the filming was. And it's, this show was just so stinking good.
I really liked how they talked about the set and how it really was one big ship.
Yeah, it was two separate sets, yeah. But they joined at one spot.
Yeah, and then how they used natural light, and it's just really fascinating.
Indeed. this show really, I don't know, it's one of those shows that I think if they were able to bring it back, I think it would do well now. But the cast has all moved on to other such big things that there's no way they could ever do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was a lightning in a bottle situation. And I think, and I hate to, maybe this is not the best segue for that, but I think Serenity, the film, was kind of proof of that. That this really was something that existed and, you know, its time had kind of come and gone. Not that Serenity was a bad film. I like Serenity. But clearly by 2004, the cult really hadn't been established that well yet, I don't think.
No, no.
You know, now maybe Serenity would do better. And I really admire Universal for doing what they did, the whole thing where they let the fans know about screenings of it throughout the course of the year. And then it got a really big opening, a really wide opening in September of 2004. But yeah, by then, like, the cult wasn't completely there. A lot of people who saw the movie didn't realize there was a Firefly. It just, you know, I think it was just maybe a little too soon, because the cult really wasn't that firm.
And I was disappointed with the movie after I saw the series.
Okay.
I thought, why they spend so much time talking about Reavers? And that was just disappointing to me, when there's so many great relationships that they could have really dug into more.
I think that's kind of where the you have to make it accessible for the people who haven't seen the show right. factor comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I, like Julie, I saw the movie, and then I got into the series after Dave introduced me to it. And I liked the film, but it really is, you know, like you're saying, Ethan, I mean, it really is, it's there's enough action to get sci-fi fans just kind of hooked into it. And it's got a great hook of an opening scene, I think. But yeah, I mean, all the great chemistry in the show, it really is, they kind of rush through all the human elements.
Yeah.
And I think part of the issue is, I'm sure Whedon had the next two or three seasons planned out. Well, you get one movie to get all this done in.
Right. And according to this article I brought with me from Entertainment Weekly, he meant for this to be kind of like a compressed season two.
Yeah, which, wow.
That's, no.
It's rough. It really speaks to how awesome the show is. That, and with a show that ran 14 episodes and a movie, you've built such a rabid fan base even to this day. Actually, to get to that, you know, I'll just jump into our second clip with Adam Baldwin. This one actually isn't from our interview. It's from the interview that Christopher over at Jonja.net had. And he's graciously let us go ahead and use that, so we'll go ahead and play that next.
Does it kind of amaze you that one season and one movie has put your name within the sci-fi community in such high standing?
Yeah, I don't even know how to judge that, really. I'm just really appreciative of the fact that I've been able to join this community, and I've met so many really cool people, and
Yeah, I've heard you've made some brown coats very happy. Joining them at the bar.
Yeah, they make me happy too, though. So, you know, they share really great stories. Once they get over the fact that it's the actor from the movie, I just sit there and have a couple of beers with them. And they're like, oh, he's not so abnormal. But, I mean, I truly do it just because I enjoy meeting people. I like getting out there, you know.
And that's one thing that is prevalent from every single person that you talk to who's been involved with the show. Regardless of how long their career has been, they've all felt that this was a truly special experience. Even Ron Glass, who very easily has the longest career, going back to even to Barney Miller and everything else he's done, has just been really taken aback by, you know, just how much love he's been getting from the fans for this.
Yeah.
I want to have a beer with Adam Baldwin.
Depends on who comes out this year for Starfest. Hey, if they get another person out, hey, go grab a beer. Marina, maybe not. Just because, you know, you get thinking of the Inara factor, you're like, would that be the kind of person to go get a beer anyway? I don't know. We have a caller.
Ignore that.
Okay. Let's talk briefly about
Shut up, phone! Jesus Christ!
I just brought it back just in time for that. Perfect. We should talk briefly about where everyone has gone from here, because this has been a show, kind of like with Farscape as well, is in that people will tend to follow these people's career. Even Battlestar Galactica has proven this as well.
Yeah.
From, you know, when sci-fi fans find an actor that they connect to and love, or a show that they love, they will follow those actors to just about everything. You've got Jewel State and Marina Baccarin, who are both on Stargate. Marina's gone on to do V currently. She is the queen alien.
That's right.
Adam Baldwin on Chuck. Glorious Chuck. Such a good show. Mm-hmm. Alan Tudyk has done some movies, you know, Death at a Funeral, iRobot. He was probably the reason why the last two episodes of Dollhouse that aired were for the first season were so good. He was such a good villain. It just shows that all these people are really good. Obviously, Nathan Fillion is the star of Castle.
Yes. Well, he's never miss an episode of that.
He's got a movie coming out with Michelle Monaghan called Trucker in a few weeks that is a serious Oscar contender.
I'll see that.
And, and he was in Waitress. Yeah, one of the best things about that film. And yeah,
love Nathan Fillion. He just has one of those qualities that is like really accessible. You know, like he's good looking but not too good looking, and he's funny. And
he's another Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
there you go. That's a good way to put that. Actually, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, Gina Torres, of course, who is Mrs. Lawrence Fishburne. She pops up in character roles here and there. She was in that Chris Rock comedy we're talking about, I Think I Love My Wife.
That was
I like more than you did, obviously.
And then you had Summer Glau go and do the...
The end was so bad.
It was.
Then you had Summer Glau go and do the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which got canceled. But she was pretty darn
she
good
was
in that,
very
too.
Very good in that show, yeah.
So I think we're going to end up seeing this cast around for quite some time.
Zac Efron was on an episode.
Wow.
Which one?
He was the one, it started with like a young Simon.
Was he the young Simon?
Yeah.
In Safe.
All of a sudden, Zac Efron has geek cred on this show.
I don't know about that, but that's just, wow, I didn't even think about that.
No, I'm not.
He didn't script the Chinese. And that's another thing to bring up about Firefly. I don't know why I skipped this part. Essentially, the whole point is the U.S. and China are the last two superpowers, so everyone can, you have these, you know, inbred country hicks who are talking Chinese, which is hilarious. Because it's not the easiest language in the world to learn.
No.
It's a really inventive touch, and it's just another. Yeah. Just another. It's like it's great because it just shows how just under the counter brilliant the show was, and it's also a crippling thing because it was just yet another thing about how Fox could not possibly convey what the show was in little 30-second spots.
Indeed. And I hate to say it, but we are running out of time.
Oh no!
So I need to cut this short. I want to know what your favorite episode is and who your favorite people are, though. And if you've listened to the commentaries, what your favorite is. So shoot us an email, podcast@screengeeks.com. Give us a call, 719-553-5664. Let us know what you like. We'll have that info again at the end of the episode. But what's coming out this week in theater, sir?
Clint Eastwood directs, and Morgan Freeman plays Nelson Mandela alongside Matt Damon. The aforementioned Matt Damon. In Invictus.
Matt Damon.
I wasn't ready. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sorry. I should have seen that one coming. Disney's The Princess and the Frog opens wide.
Which we can talk about next week.
We certainly will. Peter Jackson's The Lovely Bones opens in limited release. And Tom Ford's A Single Man, starring Colin Firth, supposed to be an excellent movie, opens in limited release as well.
Cool. And then what hits DVD next week?
DVD, I believe the top grossing comedy of the year thus far, The Hangover, available on regular and Blu-ray. One of the best films of the year, no question. Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds. A film that I think Dave gave the most positive review of out of all critics this year. That's Disney's G-Force.
You know, the funny thing is, doesn't suck is not necessarily the greatest review.
But you did give a very nice review, and I like your review. It was a very good review. Let's see. Robot Chicken Season 4. Good show. A film that was in theaters literally for 1 week. Jeremy Piven in The Goods, Live Hard, Sell Hard. Available on Blu-ray, Star Trek The Original Series Season 3.
So you can now get all three series in their high-def glory.
Very nice. And then one of the biggest disappointments of the year, Ang Lee's Taking Woodstock.
Fair enough.
Yep.
Yeah, you weren't the biggest fan of that one, were you?
No, I was terribly disappointed in that movie. You can't have a Woodstock movie and not show a single stage performance. It just made like Woodstock look like a big camping outing.
Fair enough. All right.
Woodstock was not a camping trip. Things happened there. It was the summer of love, people.
Well, I hate to say it, but I'm going to skip the voicemail this week.
Oh, no.
We'll get to it next week because we won't be under such a time crunch. Okay. But we've got a few minutes, so I'd like to talk about if each of us could pick like one movie we watched this week and talk about it. I will be happy to go first since I'm kind of sort of prepared. I finally saw Zombieland on Friday night. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I love and adore Zombieland. It's almost as much fun as I had at Grindhouse. I don't know if you had kind of got that same feeling or not, Ethan.
No, I think Grindhouse is a far superior movie, but Zombieland's fun.
It's not a movie out to change the world. It's not out to try to become one of the greatest films of all time, but it's probably one of the most fun movies I've seen in a very, very long time. And you liked it too, right, Barry?
I love Zombieland. It's not one of my favorite films of the year, but I loved it. I think it's, I think the comparison to Shaun of the Dead is apt. It actually finds something very new and very fresh to do with the zombie movie.
The greatest cameo ever.
And I appreciate, thank you. I think it's great that nobody is talking about it. Nobody's giving that away. I love that. It's become one of the
Roseanne
great movie
Barr
secrets.
Just spoiled it.
Dang it, Ethan. And it's just a wonderful character movie. Jesse Eisenberg is so appealing and wonderful in that movie. Woody Harrelson is like the new Snake Plissken. He's fantastic in it.
There is one thing about Jesse Eisenberg that's ruined him for me forever. And that would be that apparently Billy Flynn over at geekradiodaily.com said that Jesse Eisenberg is what if Michael Cera and Adam Sandler had a love child?
I don't see the Adam Sandler comparison.
Oh, depending on the shot, I totally saw it. Absolutely. So anyhow, Ethan, why don't you go next? What give us a movie you watched this week.
I watched The Beastmaster.
You didn't go for the one I thought you would.
Sorry, I have to talk about this movie.
Okay.
See, this movie has the three... You guys have seen this, right?
I've seen it many times, yep.
Yeah. Yes.
This movie has three key ingredients to a good movie.
Yes.
A ferret, a scene with quicksand, and Rip Torn is a bad guy.
Oh, man.
I guarantee when this is remade in a few years with Taylor Lautner and there's a CGI panther and CGI ferrets and CGI hawk, I guarantee there will be no quicksand scene or scene of Rip Torn tossing kids into a fire.
I love the scene with the monsters who are like the vampire bats and they wrap you up in their wings. I love those creatures. That's one of my favorite scenes. And I got to say, like the element I expect you to mention, I had a huge monster crush on Tanya Roberts. My gosh, this is a PG movie with like a total nude scene in it. Like, what a gift to an 8-year-old boy who wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies. It's like the best thing. Like, okay, son, you can watch it. Mom walks away, and like there she is, naked on the river. I'm like, I love the PG-rated Beastmaster.
Wow.
All right then, Julia, what do you want to go next?
Yes. Okay. I saw The Perfect Holiday, which I'm sure none of you have ever heard of, but Barry's been getting me all these Christmas movies from the library. So this one is funny. It's with Queen Latifah, Gabrielle Union, Morris Chestnut, and Charlie Murphy as a rap star.
Oh.
Jay Jizzy. Okay. So it's a love story, but it's also Queen Latifah plays this I don't know, angel slash fairy person who tries to make good things happen to good people, and she shows up randomly as different people, and then Jay Jizzy plays Gabrielle Union's ex-husband, and he is just hysterical. So
Charlie Murphy.
Yeah. So if you want to see a fun Christmas movie that's just silly, Perfect Holiday is the one.
Cool.
Barry saw it.
Yeah, I can't say I recommend it, but I will watch it every December from now on for the rest of my life. Yeah. If there is one bad Christmas movie you watch, I mean, you have to, like, you remember all the Bill Nighy scenes in Love Actually? Imagine that with a gangster rapper trying to cut a gangster rap Christmas album. Charlie Murphy is so effing funny. And Faison Love from Couples Retreat, he plays this department store Santa slash bounty hunter. It is a riot. And then you've got the scenes.
He's
between,
the elf.
Yeah, the elf, sorry. Then you got Queen Latifah and Terrence Howard as the good and bad Christmas angels, which feels like another movie altogether, and it's terrible. Yeah. But like, I gotta say, like, as far as like bad movies go, this is like the creme de la creme. It is so much fun.
All right, I'll let you wrap it up then, sir.
I'll just say, like, we watched Home Alone last night, and Home Alone for me just holds up really well. And I gotta say, like, the scenes of Kevin and the old man who lives next door, for me, that's what makes
old
it a classic.
Marley.
Old man, that's what makes it a classic movie, I think. But I want to throw this out because not only do I love the movie, but I listened to the commentary on it on the Home Alone Family Fun Edition, which is chock full of extras. They have a commentary with Chris Columbus and Macaulay Culkin. And during that commentary, like, one of my favorite nuggets of information I learned was that Chris Columbus revealed his pitch to 20th Century Fox what Home Alone 2 would be. His idea for Home Alone 2 would be that it takes place like now, like 15 years later, and Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci have gotten out of jail. They're reformed citizens. They're good guys, and they're neighbors. They live next door to each other. It's Christmas Eve. They're happy-go-lucky guys. Kevin has gone to jail, and he's gotten out of jail, and he wants revenge on the burglars.
Oh my God.
Isn't that fantastic? So he pitched that to 20th Century Fox, and either to do it like, you know, in 1992 with like an older Kevin, you know, and have like, you know, Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci wear like old age makeup, or to like actually wait till 2007 to do the sequel. Anyway, they
would kill to see that movie.
Does that sound awesome? But they hated his idea so much, they decided to go with John Hughes' screenplay, which is, you know, just a recycling of the first movie and setting it in New York with the magic pigeon lady.
Oh.
That is good, though.
Isn't that a fantastic idea? Like, it's so funny and off
if
the wall
had
and
bad
weird.
Bad Santa now, we can do this Home Alone movie.
Yeah.
That would be, oh.
I love Bad Santa.
Well, in a few years when they reboot the Home Alone franchise,
and
they
you know
can
they
do
will.
That.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
True.
Botner is Kevin.
Oh, leaving it alone. I'm leaving it alone. All right. If you want to shoot us email or voicemail, even though we didn't read it listen to it this week, I do apologize.
Sorry.
To Flynn and Tommy. We'll play it next week. Shoot us an email, podcast, Barry, Dave, Ethan, or Melissa, all at screengeeks.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 719-553-5664. And I don't know what we're doing next week. We might start a new director series, or who knows? Maybe we'll do
Todd
a Christmas movie episode.
Todd Solondz.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, if you email us, tell us who you want us to talk about next. We'll make it happen.
Just thinking Marty and Ethan should do a show together, because, man, Marty would love to do a Todd Solondz episode.
Hey, you know, whenever he comes back out here, we'll do a special episode.
Shoot, that'd be fun.
There we go. All right, but until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And Julia.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
See you next week.